Are you ready to die? You know, you see a lot of interesting things standing in this pulpit. When I said that, one or two of you had horrified looks on your face. One or two of you nodded. The rest of you, I think, controlled your outward emotions and just thought in your heart, I can't believe he's asking something like that in a sermon. And while it does sound a little bit like a question out of a Clint Eastwood movie, and death is something that we really do have difficulty talking about, sometimes it does help to mix in a little bit of humor. I read about a man by the name of John Henderson who lived in a small town all of his life, and he was a lifelong Republican. And at about 90 years old, his health really began to seriously fail, and his mind was still very strong. He was alert. His trips to the doctor, though, were more and more frequent. Finally, the doctor told him one day, John, you've lived a long, full life. Why don't you just go home and sit on the front porch and enjoy your final days? One morning shortly after that, he got up and dressed to go out, and he asked his son to drive him to the courthouse. His son thought that was a little bit unusual, and so he asked his dad what he needed to do at the courthouse. John answered that he wanted to change his party registration from Republican to Democrat. But Dad, you established the Republican Party in this town. You've been a Republican all your life. Why would you want to switch now? John answered, well, I figured if somebody's got to die, it might best be them. The screenwriter Woody Allen has expressed it like a lot of folks really feel. He said, it's not that I'm afraid to die, I just don't want to be there when it happens. The fact is, though, that we are all going to die. Because that's a part of God's order. Hebrews 9, verse 27 assures us that it is one of those things, or it is the thing that is appointed unto every man. No matter who you are, it's an appointment that can't be canceled, nor can we be late for it. So sooner or later, we need to talk about it. And I think maybe this is a good time. Yet this might not be necessarily what you think it's going to be. Turn in your Bibles there to 1 Chronicles chapter 28. I'm going to invite you to look with me at a few verses here in this chapter. And from those verses, I want us to notice three points about how we should face death. And we'll give every one of those points a single word title to help us remember the point by. But before we actually get to the first point, I want you to look with me to verse 1 there in 1 Chronicles 28. It kind of sets the stage and helps us to see what's going on here. It says, now David assembled at Jerusalem all the officials of Israel, the princes of the tribes, the commanders of the divisions that served the king, the commanders of thousands, the commanders of hundreds, the overseers of all the property and livestock belonging to the king and his sons, with the officials and the mighty men, even all the valiant men. What a gathering that was. everybody who was anybody in the government there close around King David was here to hear the final address of the man after God's own heart. David was at the end of his life. He knew that he was at the end of his life. He had reigned over God's people for 40 years. More importantly, he understood that his time was just about gone, his time to be king and his time for physical life. So I'd like to call your attention to three things, three points that will perhaps help us as no matter where we are in our lives right now, even whether we're Republican or Democrat, three things that will help us to face that time, especially when we think we can see that time drawing near. First of all, consider the word contentment. Dying without bitterness and frustrated desire is crucial. I think perhaps all of us have had or certainly will have desires in our lives that will never come to be. And there are some who will see the end of life approaching having never accomplished something that they've really set their heart on or having never received something that you've really expected or really looked forward to having. How will you deal with that? Some people handle it well, quietly, with dignity and grace. On the other hand, there are some folks who reach that point in life and they handle it with sometimes very open and even very loud bitterness. They literally cause other people not to want to be around them because of their attitude of bitterness. Perhaps it's a wife who has lived with a difficult husband, just knowing that someday if I hang in here, he's going to change. But the days turn into years and the years turn into decades. And finally, the realization comes, he's never going to change. Will she be bitter? Will she walk out on him and God? You know, there's something to be said for the maturity of learning to accept life as it is rather than what we would like for it to be. The sooner we accept our circumstances and learn to live with them, the circumstances that we cannot change, those things that are not up to us to do better and produce better results, but the things that we cannot change, the sooner we accept those circumstances and learn to live with them, the sooner we will cease to be miserable. Look back to the text now at verse 2. Then King David rose to his feet and he said, "Listen to me, my brethren and my people. I had intended to build a permanent home for the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord and for the footstool of our God. So I had made preparations to build it. But God said to me, 'You shall not build a house for my name, because you are a man of war and have shed blood.'" Yet the Lord, the God of Israel, chose me from all the house of my father to be king over Israel forever. For he has chosen Judah to be a leader, and in the house of Judah, my father's house, and among the sons of my father, he took pleasure in me to make me king over all Israel. You see what David's saying here? He says, I wanted to build the temple. I wanted to be the one to build God's temple. But God said no. God said I could not do it. But he did allow me to be king. You see, David accepted what God didn't allow, and he clung to and developed what God did allow. And notice the way that he says it. He says, of all the tribes, there was the tribe of Judah. One out of all of the others. And out of all of the families of the tribe of Judah, there was my father's family that God chose. And he said, and of all the sons that my father had, it was me that God chose to be king over all Israel. That doesn't sound very bitter, does it? In fact, it sounds very thankful. Acknowledging God's wonderful blessing that had come upon David among a number of people. God let me be king. Ken Keyes Jr. wrote, to be upset over what you don't have is to waste what you do have. How many have squandered away the happiness of their lives in just this way, bitter because of something that they had their heart set on but weren't able to have or achieve? We find the same example in the life of the Apostle Paul. He dwelt on what he had, not on what he didn't have. In Philippians 4, verse 11, he said, not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. 1 Timothy chapter 6, and verse 6, he said, but godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. Are you content with what is, or are you frustrated with what isn't in your life? David didn't get what he wanted, what he had his heart set on, but he was very thankful to have been the man that he was. Number two, heritage. We're not talking about money in a bank account. We're not talking about houses and land. We're talking about passing on a reputation worth carrying. Your descendants will not have your good reputation if you do not provide it. And it's really, really important to get started on this before very late. Notice what the text says in verse 8. David is continuing to speak. He said, so now in the sight of all Israel, the assembly of the Lord, and in the hearing of our God, observe and seek all the commands of the Lord your God, so that you may possess the good land and bequeath it to your sons after you forever. while David does, as God had, illustrate this principle by the reference to the lands, he's talking about faithful obedience. As David speaks some of his last words, he does not speak them of himself, but of what the people must be. You know, there's something about a man speaking from his deathbed that usually causes people to listen. What he says is generally very important, especially to those who love him. He's very influential now. In fact, words of dying men of God, are prominent in the Bible. The closing chapters of the book of Genesis, the Bible gives in great detail how old Jacob called all of his sons to his bedside right before he died and bestowed blessings and instructions upon each of those men. Several chapters in the book of Deuteronomy are dedicated to the final words or song of Moses. In fact, some have described the entire book of Deuteronomy as Moses' deathbed address. It was pretty much a summary of all that God had done for his people up to that time. We remember Joshua as he neared death, assembling God's people and challenging them to follow the Lord. And now David does the same thing. I've read that Ben Franklin, on his deathbed, asked for pen and paper and wrote his epitaph to be placed on his tombstone. It says this: "The body of Benjamin Franklin, printer. Like the cover of an old book, its contents torn out and stripped of its lettering and gilding, lies here. Yet the work itself shall not be lost, for it will, as he believed, appear once more in a new and more beautiful edition, corrected and amended by the author." Now, whether that's a lot of urban legend or mostly fact, I can't really verify. But it does express a pretty significant point. It is important to live our lives in righteousness as we approach our death, the time at which many people will reflect on how we have lived and what we have done. And then number three, expectation. Handing down instructions to be carried out. Verse 9, "As for you, my son Solomon, know the God of your father and serve him with a whole heart and a willing mind. For the Lord searches all the hearts and understands every intent of the thoughts. If you seek him, he will let you find him. But if you forsake him, he will reject you forever." David laid out the work for Solomon to do. He had pretty much taken care of the plan for the temple. He had made preparation for its construction. He had gathered materials together, and the charge is given to Solomon, but not just a charge to build the temple, but the charge to be courageous and act. What do we expect of those who follow us? Have we told them? How will they know if we haven't taken the time to tell them? Have we left them with guidance, material, and a plan? If not, why not? What are we waiting for? I've been told that there is a boy who lives in New Jersey who eagerly awaits a letter every year, once a year, on his birthday. It's a letter from his father, who died many years ago, but in his wisdom, on his deathbed, this boy's father prepared a series of letters to be delivered to his son, one on each birthday, the last one reserved for his wedding day. And now each year, he receives a little more instruction and guidance to help as he grows to manhood. That's a pretty neat thing. I hope I would have had the foresight to do something like that in a similar circumstance. But the fact is, many people are obsessed with one thing as they grow older, and that's themselves. I say that as kindly as I know how. Not trying to be mean or rude. But there is that natural human tendency to see only ourselves and our problems, our declining state, as we approach death. And some of that is certainly understandable. But some of that is selfishness. Selfishness that results from a life of selfishness. An often repeated theme in the stories of the deaths of men of God in the Bible is their concern for those who would come behind them and carry on after their lives were over. Certainly that should be our concern as well. The next chapter, 2 Chronicles 29, tells us that David died shortly after this occasion which we've just studied. Are you ready to die? Like me, I'm sure most of us would try to insist, I'm still getting ready. And that's not such a bad thing as long as we really are getting ready. But if it is regarded by ourselves as something that we're going to get around to one day, I know there are things I need to do, but right now I've got a lot of important things to take care of. Don't fall into that trap. Getting ready to die is of crucial importance. When I think back not only to godly men in the Scriptures, but godly men whom I have known in my brief life, I'm encouraged. And every time I see a reminder or hear a reminder or just recall a memory of one of those people, it helps me not only to realize how important it is to live my life so that I can face death without fear, but it also helps me to look forward to the time when we can be joined together in the eternal reward. But I also have known a lot of people who never got ready to die. And you have too. And there is nothing any more burdensome or troubling to see those people continue day after day without any preparation to come to the end. And sad, so sad are the occasions when the end does come and they were not ready. And so, are you ready to die? If you're not a child of God, if you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ to become a Christian in the way that the New Testament teaches that you must, I assure you, you're not ready. And I would implore you to consider the importance of what we've talked about here today and to take the necessary steps. Believing in Jesus as God's Son, repenting of your sin, confessing Him as your Master, being buried with Him in baptism for the remission of sins. Perhaps you've already done that, but have become unfaithful in your service to God. Come back before it's too late. If you're subject to our Lord's invitation in any way, we invite you to respond as we stand and sing.